add. I mean, there's a reason the pianist is playing in front of Nordstrom and not at Carnegie Hall, but it's a tolerable soundtrack. 2.4%, Miney answers with uncharacteristic precision. I do not ask her how she arrived at that number, but estimating that she's been to at least one party a weekend for half a decade, this means she's been proximate to throw up about 6 times. Those are reasonable odds.
Little D, you'll be fine.
What if the football team is there? They will likely hide from you since you are like the ultimate fighting champion now. In UFC, they don't abide by rules. I abide by rules. I fight with honor.
Right.
Can you please also give me instructions for dancing?
Excuse me?
I need instructions for dancing. Like, how do I move my body to music in front of other people? Break it down, step by step.
Seriously? Dancing isn't one of those things that come with instructions. It's not like putting together IKEA furniture.
Please help me.
Well, first of all, this is not the sort of music that we'll be playing.
She motions to the pianist, who is bald and bearded, which I've always found to be a bizarre combination. You would think you would want cranial and mandibular hair consistency.
No Ravel's Bolero. Got it.
No classical music, period. They'll probably just play all the crap that's on the radio.
I amend my original request. I need instructions for dancing to noise.
You just move your body to the beat. Feel the music.
Miney puts her arms up and sways to sounds I do not hear. She closes her eyes, leans on the tips of her toes, and jumps. After approximately 90 seconds, she stops and looks at me.
Your turn.
I don't think so.
Miney doesn't respond. She just waits.
Fine.
I copy her, jump up and down, though I don't actually jump down, which is a misnomer. I let gravity do its job. My sneakers make discordant squeaks along the marble floor.
No, stop. You look like you're having a seizure. Think of dancing like having a conversation, but with the music instead of with another person. It's all intuition and instinct.
Right, because I'm good at all three of those things. Intuition, instinct, and having conversations with other people.
Little D, sarcasm becomes you. Seriously, though, you got this. Just like when you're talking to Kit, follow her lead. Look for the cues. If the song is fast, you move faster. If it's slow, move slower, more intimately. Maybe for you it won't be about instinct.
Then what will it be about? I ask.
Well, you're good at details, right? Noticing the small things? And you know how to listen. Like, really listen in a way no one else can. So maybe use those skills? Do it your way.
You're not making sense. Dance my way? I don't have a way.
You do. Everyone does.
We have reached the center of the atrium, and the sun is glaring down. It's too hot in here. Ravel suddenly seems like an aggressive choice for them all. I think through the numbers, applying values to a cost-benefit analysis of the chances of my humiliating myself if I decide to dance at the party. The math feels uncomfortably random, like I've assigned numbers just to make myself feel better.
And this could be your chance. Say you're dancing with Kit. Maybe you lean in a little and bam, you guys kiss.
Do you think this is my once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to kiss Kit Lowell? And if so, what do you think are my chances in that regard? I ask.
Yes, and I think your odds are about 2.4%.
So you're saying that on Friday night, I have an equal chance of getting vomited on as I do of getting kissed?
Welcome to high school,
Miney says.
Chapter 28, Kit. You look beautiful, David says right into my ear, so close I shiver. My back presses against a speaker blasting crappy music, and I flip my hair in a way I've seen Jessica do, right, then left, then right again. I instantly regret it because I have the kind of hair that frizzes, not flips. I am wearing my mom's red bandage dress and her most expensive heels, and I'm carrying a full bottle of some fancy Scandinavian vodka, the total effect of which makes me feel like I'm in a Halloween costume. Cocktail party grown up. I took, well, stole all this without asking, of course, despite the fact that my mom would have happily lent me her clothes, if not handed over the alcohol. That would have meant having to talk to her, and I'm not ready for that. The silence between us has turned malleable and soft, though. I suspect we are now being quiet out of self-protection. We are both too raw for words. I still eat dinner alone in my room. I still hate love my mother. The party is too crowded. Most of Mapleview High is here, even a few guys who graduated last year and go to the local community college, and people are dancing anywhere they can find space, on couches, side tables. They bounce around against each other as if this is a rave and not Dylan's parents' living room. Gabriel and Willow eat each other's faces right in the center of the makeshift dance floor, the sort of making out that gives kissing a bad name. Abby and Jessica giggle from the sidelines. Based on their bloodshot eyes and the bag of Cheetos they are sharing, I'm pretty sure they're high. Neither of them would be caught dead eating something fluorescent. Scratch that. Eating at all, sober. Thanks, I say to David, and hope he doesn't notice that I'm blushing. My mother, when she feels like complimenting me, almost always suggests some adjustment. Maybe try a different shirt, Kit. Yellow doesn't suit your skin tone. Then only once I've taken her advice and changed does she say I look lovely. Beautiful feels like an upgrade. It's too loud, David says again into my ear, and I want him to keep talking, because it feels good, him leaning in like that, tickling my ear with his breath. He's right, of course. It is way too loud. I have no idea why I come to parties. It's not like I actually want to talk to any of the people here, or, God forbid, dance. David and I would have been much better off heading to McCormick's alone to have burgers and milkshakes. I lead David by the hand, past Justin, who is DJing, away from the noise and throngs and into the kitchen. If the other room felt like mayhem, here it feels post-apocalyptic. The overhead lights are on, bottles, ketchup packets, and empty potato chip bags litter the countertops. There's a puddle of something yellow on the floor, and for Dylan's sake, I really hope it's beer, not pee, though let's be honest, they taste and smell the same. Violet and Annie lean against the counter and sip from red plastic cups and greet us with weary enthusiasm. Hello, they say in unison, and give me a semi-drunken hug, then lean into David, who at first doesn't know what to do, but eventually leans in too. This is disgusting. Why don't people clean up after themselves? David's wearing a fitted blue cashmere sweater and jeans that border surprisingly on skinny. He has a leather jacket crooked on his arm. He looks handsome. I have trouble looking away. He rolls up his sleeves and starts to gather up some trash. You can leave it, I say. His sister must have picked out his clothes. It has her stamp of effortless cool. I wonder if she could give me lessons. I'd pay, seriously. Really? I don't really get what we're supposed to do here otherwise, David says. We're supposed to just have fun. Have fun. Sure, I can do that, he says, though he looks uncomfortable and has what I think of as his processing face. Like he's translating my words from English to whatever language it is he speaks in his head. But it's loud, like really, really loud, even in here, and the lights are too bright. Have a drink. That should help. I pour out four clear shots from my mom's bottle. I'm driving. He says. Good answer, More for me then, my DD. I say, a stupid play on the words designated driver and David Drucker. I'm glad he is responsible, but I don't want to think about driving. I hand Violet and Annie their shots and swig mine and David's fast, one after the other. They burn on the way down. Like David, I no longer have any idea about how to have fun, how to just be. And so I have decided if I'm going to survive this party, I need a little help. I don't really see any other way. Slow down, Violet says, looking at my now empty glasses. I've drunk before, but not a lot and not often. The night is young. So are we, I say, and take a third shot just as fast. Violet gives Annie a look, but it turns out Annie's on my side on this one. Touché, Annie says, and pours out more drinks and hands them around. She even pours David a cup of soda. To hashtag Team David. To David, I say. To me? He asks, adorably confused. A few minutes later, or maybe much later, I can't really tell, David takes my hand and leads me outside to the backyard, which is mercifully quiet. My head is humming, and my edges are blurry, and the world is rolling. I'm drunk. That much is obvious. How drunk I am and how much I will regret this tomorrow remain to be seen. Do you want my jacket? David asks, and I shake my head, which is, of course, a mistake. A wave of nausea hits fast and hard. Let's sit down, I say, and we find our way to the back porch steps. I scoot up next to David since it's cold out. We are the only people dumb enough to be outside. Even the smokers have abandoned their cigarettes for the warmth of the house. You okay? You're not going to throw up or anything, are you? He asks, and I don't know why I find this hilarious, but I do. I laugh, and then he does too, and the laughing and the cold somehow clear away the nausea. Nope, I pinky swear I will not blow chunks. David winces, and then of course my face goes red. Why did I have to say blow chunks, which is by far the least romantic word combo in the English language? I could have just said no. I mean, I'm fine. You match, you know. Your outsides and your insides are beautiful, David says. And he throws one arm stiffly over my shoulder. The movement is awkward and clumsy. And because of this awkwardness and clumsiness, not despite it, I'm charmed. Or maybe it's the four vodka shots and whatever concoction Annie made for me. Either way, I like sitting here, with David's arm heavy around my shoulders. I like studying his profile, basking in the glow of his compliments. I want to reach up and feel the tiny bit of stubble along his jawline. Unlike the rest of the guys here, he is more man than boy. I like to match, I say, which I realize makes no sense, but I think still comes off in a flirty way. It's so much easier to flirt drunk. How come I never realized this before? This is the sort of basic information I'm sure someone like Lauren Drucker already knows. David smells good, and the crook of his neck seems inviting, the sort of place where I should rest my dizzy head. And I do. Nuzzle right in there, which is something I would never do without liquid courage. We match, I say, and as soon as the words are out, I already know that tomorrow will come, and I will remember this moment and wince. We match? And so, even through this drunken haze, I feel relief when he doesn't laugh at me. Instead, he squeezes me a little tighter, brings me a tiny bit closer so my edges are against his edges, and it's all warm. Our bodies fit. I secretly sniff him and get rewarded with his fresh, lemony scent. I want him to kiss me, I realize. There is nothing else really left for me to want. I can't undo the past 2 months. I can't make my dad be alive, or my mother not be a cheater. I can't undo the accident. I'm no longer naive enough to think that figuring out the math could somehow make it better. I can't become editor-in-chief. I can't change or fix any of it. But kissing David would feel good. Good enough for me not to think about Lauren's warning that I better not hurt her brother. Good enough for me not to worry about whether David will understand the concept of a casual hookup. Good enough for me not to think about why I ever started the accident project in the first place. Good enough that I will not think about my dad or my mom or anything at all. David has told me I am beautiful. Not once, but twice. And right now, I really feel that he isn't lying. That I am, or maybe that one day I could be, beautiful, inside and out. Kissing David would make me forget. Is that so wrong? For me to want to forget for just a little while? Kissing David would feel good. Do I need a better reason than that? Team David, I think. I'm totally on Team David.
Chapter 29. David. Kit's head is resting on my shoulder. She is wearing a red dress that makes her look like a mummy. It's made of super tight blood-colored bandages, the kind of dress that should be illegal for a teenage girl because she looks about 25, not 16. I want to touch her. I want to tell her that she is the first girl I have ever loved, since I think that must be what this feeling is. Love. I have never felt this way before. I've never had someone loom so large in my brain that the rest of the stuff gets crowded out. Out here, in this quiet backyard, I can tune out the distant thump of the music. Out here, with her head on my shoulder and the smell of her shampoo, almond and honey, and the feel of her soft hair against my cheek, I can forget that I am David Drucker. I can forget everything, that I'm the kind of person whose mom has to hire a social skills tutor so I can learn how to have a basic human conversation, that I'm the kind of person who routinely receives texts that say things like, "Die, loser," that I'm the kind of person who would be stupid enough to go into a bathroom stall with Justin because he promised he had something cool to show me. How do I kiss her? Miney gave me a ton of advice, like not to jam my tongue down Kit's throat or to be too slobbery. She even made me watch YouTube tutorials on technique, but we never got around to how to actually do it. How do I move from us sitting next to each other, ostensibly observing the stars and listening to the eerie creak of the swing set, to putting our lips together? Kit? I decide I will just ask her to kiss me, or better yet, ask if I can kiss her. Best to be direct and clear. Leave no room for miscommunication, my specialty. She says, which I assume means yes. How would you feel about me? I mean, what do you think about the idea? I can't say it. How would you feel about me kissing you? Can I kiss you would be better. Yes, that would be more accurate. I want permission, not a complicated discussion of her emotional state. Can I kiss you? Four simple words. I can do this.
I turn my head again, and as I talk, my lips brush her forehead, almost a kiss, just 7.5 inches off. Can I? But before I can ask the question, her head shifts, and she leans in and wraps her hand around the back of my neck and closes the gap. 7.5 inches erased, just like that. Her lips are on mine, and we are kissing. All I can think is Kit kissed me over and over until I stop thinking altogether.
Chapter 30. Kit. I am kissing David Drucker. I am kissing David Drucker. I am kissing David Drucker. I was wrong. I had assumed this would be his first kiss, that it would be fumbling and a bit messy, but still fun. No way. Can't be. This guy knows exactly what he's doing. How to cradle the back of my head with his hands. How to move in soft and slow, and then pick up the pace, and then slow down again. How to brush my cheeks with even smaller kisses. How to work his way down my jaw, and to soften the worry spot in the center of my brow. How to pause and look into my eyes, really look. So tenderly, I feel it all the way down in my stomach. He even traces the small zigzag scar on my eyebrow with his fingertips like it's something beautiful. I could kiss him forever. I'm going to kiss him forever. I am kissing David Drucker, and yes, I've forgotten everything else. Because his lips are back on mine. Because this, right here, is the best kiss of my life. We kiss and kiss and kiss and only stop when David pulls away, cups the sides of my face with his huge hands and says, "There are cops here. We've got to go." Even that sounds romantic. He has morphed from dorky classmate to partner in crime. We hold hands and run to his car, and he opens the passenger side door for me, offers his jacket one last time. "I'm okay," I say. "You kept me warm." He smiles at me, and even in the dark, I can see that he's blushing. And now I am too. I'm hot all over. "At least take my scarf." He pulls a scarf from his jacket pocket and winds it around my neck. Cashmere, as soft as his sweater. Everything he wears is soft. He takes both edges and then pulls me toward him again, a suave move. And we kiss one last time. My chest tightens, my body tingles, and I allow myself to dissolve into him. It seems wrong that we ever need to leave this moment. I want to stay right here. "Get a room," I hear Gabriel shout as he walks by, but I don't care. Team David, I think again. I'm definitely on Team David. We don't talk on the ride home. We don't have to. I feel warm and giddy and like I have a secret that I want to keep all to myself. David Drucker. Who is so many different people all at once. The guy who always sits alone. The guy who talked quantum physics even in my dad's dental chair. The guy who held my hand in the snow. I kissed David Drucker, the guy I most like to talk to. And it was perfect. 4 a.m., alone in my bedroom. The butterflies I have savored all night suddenly turn to bats. My mouth is sour. Everything spins. David's scarf feels hot and itchy on my neck. Too tight. I feel the opposite of beautiful. The regrets start singing their cruel song in my ear, grating and on automatic repeat. Then suddenly the accident starts playing on my ceiling. Headlights, screeching tires, my foot twitches slowly, always too slow. I remember everything. Make it stop. I crawl to the bathroom with only a second to spare. I blow chunks until dawn.
Chapter 31. David. I spent 96 glorious minutes kissing Kit Lowell. 96 minutes where her mouth was against my mouth, or my mouth was against her neck, or my mouth was against that amazing freckle cluster at her clavicle. I could spend the rest of my living days kissing Kit without getting bored, without stopping, except for the physiological imperative of occasional sleep and food and to relieve myself. Best night of my life. After I drive Kit home, I lie awake on my bed. My mind is spinning, but for once, in a good way. No need to talk myself out of or down from this sensation. Kissing Kit wasn't too tangy, or too loud, or too rough, or too moist, like I had feared it might be. It wasn't too anything. It was perfect. Kissing Kit was a privilege. I replay the evening over and over again in my head, especially that very first minute. How Kit pulled my face toward hers, that feeling of her hands clasping my neck, the lack of ambiguity about what she wanted. Everything was clear. She picked me. She kissed me. Me. For just tonight, I can pretend that I am something approximating cool. I wore a leather jacket that purposely looks worn in. My jeans were fitted like a boy bander's. I looped my scarf around Kit's neck and left it there, so she'll have to see me again, if only to return it. I thought of that move all by myself. I didn't learn it from YouTube or Miney's instructions or a teen movie. And now that I've been exposed to this feeling, perfect mouth against perfect mouth, the natural order of things, I wonder why people don't kiss all day, every day. How does anything ever get done? I feel reborn. No longer Mapleview's resident hand-flapping weirdo. There is hope for me in the wider world. Hope that I can leave this place one day and start over as someone else. Me version 2.0. Me smoothed out a little. Love. I test the word in my head a few times. Let it bounce around my brain the same way I tackle a formula, slowly at first, then accelerating exponentially, until it comes out the other end, whole and solved. Love. Yes, it is clear what has happened here, what Kit has done to me. She kissed me. And then biology took over. A dopamine rush, and maybe a hit of serotonin and adrenaline too. A beautiful chemical reaction. And just like that, I am madly in love with Kit Lowell. Since love is new for me, I start as I would with any other intellectual exercise, and I Google, what do you do when you love someone? From there, I stumble upon the rules of courtship, which is a layman's way of saying human mating ritual. Apparently, the surest indicator of a person's attractiveness is whether their face is symmetrical, and so I measure mine, and am relieved to discover my halves are of roughly equal dimension. Good. Next, in order to prove their reliability to support future potential offspring, men need to spend money on the object of their affection. Though I bring no income to the table at present,
I decide the best way to show Kit that I'm a suitable partner is to demonstrate my other genetic attributes. I may not be good at small talk or making friends or abiding by high school social etiquette, but it's incontrovertible that I'm exceptionally talented at science and math. I need to show off to her, just like a ribbon-tailed astropia grows its tail feathers. I grab my notebook and write out my two-part plan. First, I will stay up all night and finish the accident project. Show Kit the real-life applications of my skill set and the myriad and unexpected ways it can benefit her. Second, I will invite Kit to the Academic League meet. It's a bit obvious to use the event as a courtship display, but as Miney likes to say, if you got it, flaunt it. Instead of sleeping, I draw diagrams, calculate axes and velocity, research car models and their various braking systems. My scientific calculator goes warm from overuse. On the internet, I find experts on car collisions and delve deep into forensic message boards, learn about head injuries, broken chest cavities, punctured hearts. I pull up the pictures I took of the accident site and blow up on my 30-inch monitor the one Kit sent me of her dad's car. A Volvo smooshed up like an accordion on the right side. I zoom in with my new camera software, examine the blood on the passenger side dashboard, stencil the splatter pattern. I read the newspaper accounts of the crash, which has a photo of the other car, a navy blue Ford Explorer with a shattered windshield, half folded in on itself, a car reimagined as a paper airplane. In the background, there's a Mini pulled over to the side that has minimal damage, just two broken headlamps, a big dent in its hood. The article doesn't mention its involvement, but based on my own analysis, I assume it was behind the Volvo. Another car changes things, adds a layer of complexity. I wish Kit had mentioned it before. I line my three pictures up next to each other as if they form a comic strip, though this is not at all funny. No matter how many times I check my work, and I do, over and over again, maybe as many times as I have relived kissing Kit, the math does not make sense. By my calculations, the only calculations, Kit's dad shouldn't be dead. "What's wrong?" Miney asks when she comes into my room on Saturday morning and finds me at my desk in the same clothes as last night. I'm flapping. "Didn't go well last night? I so thought that leather jacket would seal the deal." "What deal?" I ask. My head feels heavy. It is 9 a.m. and I haven't slept at all. I rub my face, attempt to wipe away the fatigue, which is a wasteful expenditure of energy at just the time I should be conserving. Fatigue is not something that can be wiped away like a smudge. I am not thinking clearly. "The party was great, perfect actually. Well, not the party part. Parties are horrible. I don't know why people go to them. But the rest of it, the kit of it, was great. Amazing." "Really? Then why do you look like someone ran over your dog?" "We don't have a dog." "Focus, little D."
"What?"
"Tell me what's wrong." Miney's wearing pajamas, though it's a clean pair I don't recognize. Her eyes are less bloodshot. Whatever mysterious illness she was afflicted with seems to have resolved itself.
"You do not look like someone who has had an amazing night. Did you kiss her?"
"Yep. Well, actually, she kissed me."
"She kissed you?"
"Yep."
"And?"
"And I'm in love."
"That's great, though maybe you should slow down a bit. It's a little early to be throwing the L-word around."
She plops down backward on my rotating chair, like she is a football coach in a movie about to deliver one of those huddle-up speeches. "It doesn't matter. None of it matters," I say, and shiver because I already feel the loss before it's even happened. I will never kiss Kit again.
The whole thing is over no more than 12 hours after it began. Weirdly, this realization doesn't just reset me back to my pre-Kit life, me 1.0, when kissing her had seemed as impossible as crossing the space-time continuum, when I was resigned to a lifetime of solitude. Now it is so much worse. I can't imagine going back to that empty lunch table on Monday morning, being again that guy everyone used to call shithead. The longing for Kit feels physical, like my heart is blinking. Alfred Lord Tennyson was an idiot. He was wrong. It is not better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all. If I had never loved at all, I wouldn't be here flapping. I'd be downstairs after a restful night's sleep, reading the DSM and eating Saturday morning pancakes. I wouldn't know what it's like for everyone else, what it means to not be alone. Just how far and how long I've lived away from planet normal. The accident project. I can't figure it out, I say. Please speak English, Miney says. Kit asked me to do one thing, to help her figure out how her dad died. Well, not how exactly, but the when, the moment of breaking. So the larger how, I guess, and the math doesn't work. The math always works. It's the only thing I know how to do, and I can't do it. Little D, calm down. She reaches to pat my back, but I jerk away from her hand. I don't want to be touched. My body is flaring. You have so much more to offer than math. That's not why Kit kissed you. You realize that, right? He's not supposed to be dead. Dentist is not supposed to be dead. Who's dentist? Kit's dad? Of course he shouldn't be dead. It's a tragedy. No, you don't understand. The math doesn't work. So? It's not a tragedy. It's a lie.
Chapter 32. Kit. My first thought when I wake up on Saturday morning is, I want to die. Because if I die, then the nausea will stop. The room will still, and I won't have to face the shit show that has become my life. In bed, I stare at the white ceiling and think about my mother's confession. She got drunk and made a mistake. Alcohol clouds your judgment, she said, makes you listen to the wrong voice in your head. Just because you are 45 doesn't mean you don't sometimes feel and act 16, she claimed, which is probably the most depressing thing I've ever heard in my life. Because you want to know my big secret plan right now? The only freaking thing I have in my back pocket? The idea that eventually I'll age out of this horrible life stage and never, ever look back. I wonder what David is thinking about this morning. Based on his amazing kissing skills, it's entirely possible he has a secret life. After last night, I realize I know nothing about the real him. I realize how silly, how naive it is to assume you know anyone at all. Look at my mother and me. We are made of smoke and mirrors. I check my phone and find a bunch of texts. Mom. You okay? Left a glass of water and 2 Advil by your bed. You looked rough last night. Under other more normal circumstances, I would expect a lecture. Though somehow, I doubt my mom has the nerve to criticize today. I am 16, acting 16. She's in no position to judge. But I don't remember seeing my mom last night. And that part, the not remembering, which was one of the reasons for drinking in the first place, makes me feel worst of all. Me. Hanging in there. Mom. I'll check on you in a little bit, okay? I pause for a second before texting back. I am sick and tired and weak. As pathetic as it sounds, I want my mommy. I'm too hungover, too broken for anger. This feels like it must be the bottom. Me. Okay. I open a group message with Annie and Violet. Annie. OMG, 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 KL plus DD would be LMAO if I wasn't so hungs. Violet. Annie, how much coffee have you already had this morning? Annie. 4 cups. Why? Violet. So many acronyms. Who are you? Exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point. Annie. Stop shouting. My head hurts. Violet. Kay, you okay? That was a lot of vodka. So we need details. Go David. Annie. Go David? No, go Kit. V, you see that leather jacket? Swoon. Violet. I like his slightly stubbly jaw. Me. Ugh, so sick. Vodka shots were a mistake. Kissing David, dot, 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 was not. There. That sounds almost like the old Kit. Funny and light. The old Kit was happy, or at least happy enough. The old Kit didn't understand depression. Violet. It's like overnight he went from nothing to being super hot. Me. D was always cute. It's just no one ever thought to look at him. Annie. Except you. Who knew K had such good hot guidar? Me. I don't like him because he's hot. Annie. Come on. Me. Fine, I don't like him just because he's hot. He's also all kinds of awesome. Annie. Whatever you say. Violet. Call me shallow, but for me that stubble would be reason enough. Annie. I wonder if when he talks dirty he gets all sciency. Ooh, your matter makes my particles throb. Me. Shut up. Violet. When we get together, it's like a chemical reaction. Annie. I want to insert my proton into your neutron. I read David's texts last. Maybe I should let myself enjoy this unexpected development, an amazing night of kissing. The delicious possibility that I might get to kiss David again, even enjoy my friend's gentle teasing because it reminds me of how we used to be. Maybe for right now that should be enough to get me out of bed. Let David be the tide that moves my time forward. David. Thank you for an amazing night. Damn cops. David. Can't stop thinking about you. David. Will you come to my academic league event next week? Then, about 2 hours later. David. Kit, are you there? We need to talk. David. Kit, call me immediately. David. Seriously, call me the second you wake up. I need to talk to you. David. Kit. David. Kit, it's about the accident project. The texts span the night. The first two are from sometime shortly after he dropped me off. But the last 5 came in early this morning in exactly 15-minute intervals. When I read the words accident project, they hit hard. A sucker punch. No, more like a pulverization of all my internal organs. The reminder I don't need. The accident project. Again, I sprint for the bathroom. This time, I don't make it. Are you okay, Kit? My mom asks again when she finds me slumped over in the hallway. Her tone isn't angry. It's scared. I have never been the sort of kid who breaks rules. Any rebelling I've done so far has been careful and deliberate and far away from adult eyes. But I am marinating in my own vomit, obviously hungover from a night out. My chin is red and raw from David's stubble. I want to tell her that I'm fine. Absolutely perfectly, 100% fine. That it's not really the drinking that made me throw up. At least not this last time, anyway. It's all bigger than one night out. I want to tell her I am broken, that I'm starting to suspect that not even time can fix me. I want to tell her that I have, that we have, made a big mistake. I want to tell her to leave me the hell alone, that I'm better off without her. I want to tell her to stay and hold me and make it all better. I want her to tell me that there are worse things than telling the truth. When she sits next to me cross-legged on the floor, though, I say nothing at all. Instead, I lie down on my side and put my head into her lap. Just hand over the burden that is my brain. Instead of talking, I cry. It's going to be okay, sweetheart. I promise, it's all going to be okay, she says and strokes my hair. How? I ask. I can't get out more than that, and that's all I want to know. How can it be okay? I have no idea. All right, so maybe it won't be okay. Not really. Not the same. But we'll survive this. That's a start, right? Survival? We've still got each other. Right. I mumble into her thigh. I don't want to die. Not really. I just suck at living. Is it true that I still have my mother? It doesn't always feel that way. For starters, we can shoot for not sitting in puke. I start to get up. My mom is, after all, wearing a silk t-shirt that she sometimes lets me borrow. But she holds me in place. Wait one more second. I need to tell you something while I have you captive. I know I screwed up, but I love you and your dad. When your father's parents died, your grandparents, your father, well, it broke him. And for a long time, he was like someone without batteries. Kind of like how you are now. Pathetic and dangly, empty and sad. Thanks. I mean how we are now. I'm just as pathetic and dangly, though let's be honest, I smell better. I give my mother a small smile. Despite everything, I can do that. But over time, Dad started becoming himself again. Not the same person he was before, not even close. He became a better, stronger, Humpty Dumpty glued back together version. And that's when I really fell in love with him. Head over heels. I decided that no matter what my parents had to say about it, he was going to be my person. The thing is, sometimes people grow from breaking. That's what I think was happening with your father and me before he died. I truly believe we were going to work things out. And it's what I think we both should aim for now. Not just survival. We need to become even better versions of ourselves, in honor of Dad. We owe him. That's the least we can do for the people we love. I let her words roll over me, soak in her blatant optimism. I can be better. We can be better. The new Kit could one day be somebody I'm proud of. Somebody my dad would be proud of. It's okay, I'm not the same person I used to be. I'm not supposed to be. Maybe we can make meaning out of something that feels so completely devoid of sense, even if only to make ourselves feel better. Or maybe this. I can be the old Kit and the new Kit. I can be both. I'm an and. You're such an overachiever, Mom. I say. Good thing, so are you. I nod, decided, galvanized, brave. One of the few perks of the shit so monumentally hitting the fan is you discover who your real tribe is. It's the only way through. So make sure you find yours, Kit. Okay, I say, and start assembling my team in my head. I think back to middle school when we'd have to pick players for dodgeball and gym. David was always chosen last. I imagine him standing there, looking 2 feet above everyone else's heads, his hands flapping at his sides, something he still does occasionally, though I'm not sure he realizes it. And I want to go back in time and hug him, whisper in his ear that he can come stand by me, tell him if he gets tired of flapping, he can hold my hand instead. I very much hope you'll consider including me, my mom says in her quietest voice. And I realize this is the closest someone like my mother gets to begging. When I don't immediately respond, she says, at the very least, #squad goals. I laugh. My mom loves to try to talk like a teenager. A few weeks ago, I overheard her on the phone complaining about how she was tired of adulting. And the last time we watched a romantic comedy together, she wanted to ship all the secondary characters. Yeah, we can work on that, I say, and realize just how much I've missed my mom recently. How I can't make it through without her. That there will always be room in my tribe. I unwind the soiled scarf from my neck, hold it out for my mom to take. A bizarre, vomit-soaked cashmere peace offering. Do you think this is dry cleanable? I ask. Me. Hey, just woke up. We can talk. I'm just crazy hungover, so can you give me a few hours? David. You were drunk last night? Me. Yeah. David. Like, drunk enough to be hungover? Did David not notice me drinking? At one point, I think Annie and I started swigging straight from the bottle. He was standing right next to me. Me. Apparently. David. So, does that mean... There's a long pause, that terrible, pulsating ellipsis, and I wonder what he's doing. Is he writing? Thinking of what to say next? What does he have to report about the accident project? What was I thinking getting him involved with that? It seems so pointless now, an act of desperation or self-sabotage. There's no unwinding what happened. My father's death isn't some sort of logic problem, it's a tragedy. David. Does that mean you didn't mean it? That you only kissed me because you were drunk? Me. What? No. Yes. No. David. Please explain. Me. I mean, I wanted to kiss you, and the drinking made me more comfortable. David. You were uncomfortable kissing me? Me. No, that's not what I meant. I was shy. Are you serious right now with these questions? David. Of course, I'm always serious. Me. It's not a big deal. David. What isn't? The kiss? You being drunk? Or the accident project? You are opening new loops and it's confusing. Me. I was talking about last night. Last night was not a big deal. David. It was a big deal for me. Me. Oh, I didn't mean. I just... Never mind. Let's talk in person. Texting isn't working. David. What service provider do you have? Me. Why? David, if your texting plan isn't working, could be your provider. I'll look up on Yelp who has the best coverage in Mapleview.
Chapter 33. David. Miney wants to help, but I don't let her. I need to figure out how to do this on my own. I'm ready. It's the least I can do for Kit. I'm pretty sure after today she will no longer want to kiss me,
much less sit at our lunch table. I hold out hope for the slim possibility that this will be received as good news, that I will be hailed as a conquering hero for uncovering the truth. That's what she wanted, right? For me to figure this all out? I can't trust my instincts. Trusting my instincts gets me stuck in a locker with someone else's shit in my hair. I arrive at McCormick's 15 minutes early and snag the same booth we ate in last time. I order 2 milkshakes, one for me and one for Kit, while I wait. If there is a multiverse, somewhere else, not here, instead of sitting and waiting for the horrible moment when I will tell Kit that the accident did not happen in the way she thinks it did, that it's all lies, we would be kissing. Yes, we would be kissing, maybe even on a bed. And then she is here. Her face is free of makeup and she's wearing her K-charm necklace and that big man shirt she's taken to donning twice weekly. In this way, without any attempt to hide the blue circles under her eyes, she seems even more essentially herself. I decide I like her even better with her natural face. The red mummy dress last night was a little intimidating. Now she just looks like a girl. My favorite girl, maybe, but still, just a girl. Wow, I say, the words escaping before I have a chance to think them through. What? She asks, and sits down across from me and reaches for her milkshake. Takes a sip from the outside of the glass and ends up with a white line above her lip that she wipes away with a napkin. You. I like you even with a milk mustache. Stop, you're going to make me blush, she says, and then, like magic, her brown cheeks get a pink glow. Listen, your texts, I don't know, freaked me out. First, can I kiss you? I ask, and she shrugs, and I don't know if that means yes or no. I decide to be brave and go for it. I switch to her side of the booth, and I put my hands on both sides of her face, and I lean in slowly and touch my lips against hers. It's different than last night. It's soft and sweet in both senses of the word, and too short. And when Kit pulls away, she looks at me with wet eyes. She shakes her head. You're the one who wanted to talk, remember? Right, I say. Right. So the thing is... What? The way she's sitting, it looks like Kit is bracing herself. Her hands are in front of her face, as if I'm going to sneak in an uppercut. Why would she think that? Or is she shielding herself from my lips? I have no read on the situation. I've done a lot of research, and I don't think your dad was driving that car, I say. What are you talking about? Kit asks, and her voice is all growly and low. Well, I did the math, and I studied the blood spatter and the photos and, well, everything, and given that his injuries were ultimately fatal... There's no way he was driving that car. The newspaper never actually specified he was alone, and I'm pretty sure he was in the front passenger seat. So someone's been lying to you, and I'm sorry to be the one to tell you, and please don't hate me. All I wanted was to solve the equation for you. Okay, she says, but she doesn't smile, or say thank you, or slap me, all of which seemed like equally reasonable possibilities when I played this out in my head. Maybe he was having an affair, like your mom, and his, mistress was driving and that's why no one told you? I ask. What? My dad was not having an affair. Her voice goes even quieter, almost a whisper, like she is water evaporating. There could be lots of explanations, but the how, that's what you wanted to know, right? The how of it? It isn't what we thought. And I know you don't like open loops just like me, and this is one hell of an open loop, I say,
I'm sorry. Actually, it's not an open loop.
Still quiet. Too quiet. A woman was definitely driving. I can tell by the positioning of the seat that the driver couldn't have been more than 65 inches tall.